temporary setback, a missed promotion, an extended illness, divorce, or a bad business quarter. These individuals are looking for a way to get in the game or get back in the game. Over time, people at late stage 2 either ascend or reascend to stage 3 or give up and slide into entrenched mediocrity. If they regress, they often become the elders of middle stage 2, the ones who counsel young people looking for their first break that, in the words of Scott Adams, evil is engineered into the system. It's better to give up than to try and get disappointed. Coaching tip. Work one-on-one rather than addressing culture-wide concerns. There's standard advice in management. If you take people's concerns seriously, they will feel empowered. This advice is reliable only for late stage 2 and above. Early stage 2 lacks the stability of tribal support, and middle stage 2 is an endless fountain of griping. If you try the technique of listening to and resolving issues and it fails, it means you're dealing with low to middle stage 2. Instead, try working one-on-one with those who want things to be different. Upgrade the culture, and people will take care of their own issues. We believe that companies need to focus more attention on late stage 2. Generally, this group receives few resources, as companies are mostly run by people at stage 3. Late stage 2 are the ones who are paying their dues in the minds of bosses, or people who have been given chances but have never stepped up. Many executives we talked with actually believe that late stage 2 is a Darwinian test and only the fittest escape. Roger, whom we met earlier in the chapter, did escape. He got the promotion he sought and almost immediately left the company. Now busy with his own startup venture, he's building a company with, in his words, no idiot bosses anywhere. Companies need to focus attention on late 2 and on the cause of their malaise, stage 3. The alternative is to lose good people like Roger. Coaching advancement. There are three keys to nudging people out of stage 2. First, communicate only one stage above. The principle holds for all 5 stages, except for 5, which we'll discuss in Chapter 12. In the case of a Stage 2 tribe, leaders should talk the language of Stage 3. I'm great. Coaching tip. Build amplitude. Many managers in our study said with pride that they don't speak Stage 2. This is a problem, as all of us go there from time to time. If you can't speak stage 2, you won't be able to really listen to people, which is the most potent of the tribal leadership skills. We call the ability to speak cultural languages amplitude. So if a person speaks only 3 and 4, we say the person has a 2-stage amplitude. Tribal leaders, almost without exception, speak all 5 languages. Remember, this book is about language and relationships, so it's not enough to understand stage 2 or form opinions about it. As a tribal leader, you need to speak the language as an insider. Only then can you build trust with a tribe at this stage and use leverage points to advance it. Second, spot and work with the few members of stage 2 who want things to be different. Those people at late stage 2, and work with them one-on-one. Start by explaining to each one that you see potential in him, that you want to assist him in developing leadership. Depending on how long he's been in stage 2, he may have developed an immunity to praise, believing it to be a technique of manipulation. Your goal is to build both trust in your intentions and confidence in his abilities. As you start this process, you will become the person's lifeline into stage 3. That is, he is great because you are mentoring him. If you cut the lifeline too early by stopping the personal attention, he's in danger of regressing to stage two, and, this time, lapsing into deep cynicism. Spend your time pointing out things he does well and directing him with specific action, all in the context of developing his abilities. Coaching tip. Use the power of three. Bankshot people at stage two to stage three by finding a person they trust who is at stage three, and set up a three-person meeting. If the trusted person is seen to have the back of the person at two, the meeting will have a stronger degree of trust from the outset. The third leverage point is to encourage him to form dyadic, two-person relationships. In our research, we often asked people to draw out the network of their relationships at work, using thick lines to strong personal ties, thin lines for what we called minor friendships, and dotted lines to represent information exchange. People at stage two tended to have mostly thin and dotted line relationships and not many of either. People at stage three, however, formed hub-and-spoke networks with themselves at the center. Jordan, part of the William Joseph tribe from the previous chapter, shows the power of dyadic relationships. Jordan had such a major drug problem that when he was a teenager, his parents had the police arrest him and take him in handcuffs from his bed at 2 a.m. to a detox center. At age 19, he woke up, literally, in the gutter and realized no one was going to put a roof over his head unless he did. As William said, he just got it. This was the realization that he was at stage one. Almost immediately, he cleaned himself up and went to work at Starbucks, where he didn't know anyone. He was in the midst of people but was disconnected. He had moved to early stage two. A natural talker, Jordan chatted with people individually as he made their coffee drinks. He would learn about odd jobs they had, and he began doing work on the side. Each job came through a dyadic two-person relationship. He transitioned to late stage two and decided it was time to leave Starbucks, where he had an idiot boss. He described being in stage two this way. I did everything I could, and I just got shat on. At the end of the day, the boss would just say how you fucked up. You forgot to sign for the deposits, do that again and you're fired. You wore your apron to the restroom, do that again and you're fired. I'd just had enough. There wasn't any anger in his voice, but rather optimism, as though he were looking forward to his next adventure. He leveraged off his dyadic relationships to move into different lines of work, including working with William. He had moved into early stage three. One of the biggest insights we had in collecting our data is that people's language always correlates to the specific stage, nature, and structure of their relationships. As Jordan formed these dyadic relationships, he was at the center of a network of people and part of several dynamic tribes. His language expresses the can-do attitude of stage three. You put out your financial goals for the week, he says with a confidence that makes most of Dave's MBA students look insecure. I'm going to make $300 this week just because I have to. Next week I have to make $600. Every night you come home, and if you see something you didn't do, I could have made $150 today, but I didn't. So tomorrow, I really have to make it. I don't know. You fuck with yourself like that, you get things done. I just don't want to have the average. I'm not far along in this process. I have enough money to live in a good neighborhood and have some fun and have a little backup, so I don't feel like I'm sweating all the time. Money stress is a bitch, and everyone has the ability to keep it away. Jordan had transitioned to stage three, the most populated stage, and the subject of the next chapter. It is both the biggest problem and the largest opportunity in organizations, as it is often the cause of Stage 2 and also the launching pad to Stage 4, tribal leadership. Summary of Stage 2. The person at Stage 2 is separate from others, although unlike those at Stage 1, they are surrounded by people who seem to have some power that they lack. As a result, their language expresses, "My life sucks." Unlike Stage 1, a person at Stage 2 communicates the view that others' lives seem to be working. When people at this stage cluster together, their behavior shows characteristics of being apathetic victims. Leverage points for a person at Stage 2. Encourage her to make a friend, then another friend, then another friend. In other words, encourage her to establish dyadic two-person relationships. Encourage her to establish relationships with people who are at late Stage 3. Such individuals can be identified by their eagerness to mentor others into becoming mini versions of themselves. However, the same individuals will not tolerate another becoming greater than they are. In one-on-one sessions, show her how her work does make an impact. In particular, show her areas where she is competent and where her strengths are. In the same meeting, point out abilities she has that she has not yet developed, but be careful to make the tone of these discussions positive. Assign her projects that she can do well in a short time. These assignments should not require excessive follow-up or nagging, as this behavior may reinforce her "My life sucks" language. Success indicators. She will use "I'm great" language as opposed to "My life sucks." She may name drop, point to her own accomplishments, and brag. Many of her sentences will start with "I." She will exhibit the lone warrior spirit of Stage 3. Often comparing herself with her coworkers and using disparaging language like, "What's wrong with them?" and, "If they tried, they'd succeed." Chapter 6. Stage 3. The Wild, Wild West. By any measure, Martin Coyle is living the American dream. So why is he so frustrated? Dr. Coyle, described by his colleagues as a world-class surgeon, was, until recently, chairman of his department at Children's Hospital in Denver. After doing his residency at Harvard, he pioneered new surgical procedures that are now used around the world. He's been president of two associations in his field. He is financially successful, has loving children, and has a tribe of medical students who love and respect him for conveying his passion for medicine. He's written articles in all the leading medical journals in his field and has lectured in Egypt, Africa, Canada, Israel, and England. Almost every year he volunteers in third world countries, both performing operations and mentoring local doctors, with the understanding that they will spread his teaching to benefit others. Coyle is regarded as one of the top surgeons in the world in his specialty. With all that success behind him, here's what he had to say in a meeting with us. "I'm a victim of a system that is broken. I get zero support," he continues. "I was recruited to this institution by a series of broken verbal and written commitments. Perhaps I was naive, but unkept promises are very disheartening. I'm just another commodity here, a replaceable faceless item. It makes no difference to anyone in the system that I've been a successful leader and mentor to so many others. The unspoken mantra is really, 'What have you done for me lately?' Along with 48% of American professionals, COIL is operating at stage 3 in a stage 3 culture, the zone of personal accomplishment. Like almost everyone in this group, he feels that he is putting more in than he's getting out. And we've met people like him in investment banking, sales, the humanities, including best-selling novelists and artists, with galleries around the world. Real estate, entrepreneurship, the clergy, high tech, government, and the law. His story, like that of so many people interviewed, shows a string of successes where in each case, he was recognized as the best and the brightest, and yet, he has become frustrated with the system in which he excels. The essence of stage 3 is, I'm great. Unstated and lurking in the background is, and you're not. Ask people at this stage how they see work, and you hear, I'm good at my job. I try harder than most. I'm more able than most, and most people can't match my work ethic. The key words are I, me, and my. Many of the world's great companies are dominated by people at stage 3. It's not a place for the mild. As Dr. COIL described the business of medicine where he practices, one of us commented that it sounds like the Wild Wild West. He laughed. That's what they should put above the sign at my hospital, he said. In fact, that sign should be displayed at about half the companies in the United States, and most around the world. Early Stage 3. A person enters Stage 3 when he finds his groove, acquires confidence, and is recognized for his gifts. People told us about an awakening of personal ambition that turned to a drive for career success, coupled with recognition that they had work to do. We heard, I have to prove myself. I'm just beginning to come into my own. And I have to win people over. COIL found stage 3 early, doing well in college and then in medical school in Canada where he grew up. Like many people who accomplish great things, he felt a desire to learn and to see the world. He started his residency at County USC in Los Angeles, training to be a trauma surgeon. Although recognized as both talented and hardworking, COIL quit the program, telling us that the people I was helping frustrated me. Although many patients were innocent, many were victims of their own life. And I felt like, why am I doing this? COIL reflected a common theme from our interviews, a desire to work with people like themselves, gifted, hardworking people. People entering stage 3 express insecurity with their positions, their gifts, and their colleagues, which is a leftover from stage 2. For people at I'm Great, this fear fuels their drive to perform. At a training program in Cancun, after several days of getting to know one another, we ran an experiment that Abraham Maslow suggested in his writings. We asked people to write their greatest fear on a piece of paper, fold it up, and toss it in a basket. Of the 30 or so successful executives, most with MBAs from top schools, every person said some variant of, I'm afraid they're going to find out I'm not as good as they think. This experiment marks the difference between stages 2 and 3. At My Life Sucks, this same insecurity freezes people into inaction and comes out as, I'm only as good as my performance, and I don't put in my best. For this group of highly accomplished individuals in Cancun, fear came out as an, I'll show everyone I can do it spunk. Coaching tip. Don't call someone stage 3. When we teach tribal leadership, one of the most common reactions is for someone to point out a specific name and then say, he's a stage 3. Doing so puts a person in a box from which it is hard to escape. Stage 3 is a set of language and a pattern of behavior. It is not a permanent state like tall or short. We asked Don Beck, author of Spiral Dynamics, what he'd do. He said, well, first, I'd go have a talk with the person who called the person orange, very similar to our stage 3. It's not an orange person. It's a person who is exhibiting the characteristics of orange. Likewise, it's important not to use stage 3 as a label, but rather as a description of language and action. Technical note. The essence of moving up stages is taking everything from the previous level and reconfiguring it. Stage 3, especially at the early point, shares many of the characteristics of stage 2. The key difference is an emerging passion for personal success, which overcomes the person's sense of powerlessness. An increased sense of self-reliance forms, which becomes the center of the person's language screen. As a teaser for the next chapter, moving to stage 4 means taking all the conviction, ambition, drive, and discipline from I am great and shifting it around. Moving up doesn't mean giving up any of the fire of stage 3. Once a person has graduated from stage 3 behavior, she never becomes weak or passive, but after the epiphany of chapter 7, becomes much more powerful and effective. Coaching tip. Ask, does it fit? We asked Steve Sample, former president of the University of Southern California, about his view of stage 3. He said, in a university, it can be very helpful to have people focused on their accomplishment. The individual genius can go a long way. Reflecting on his other role as an accomplished engineer with several patents, he added, stage 3, is that way in engineering too. People operating at stage 3 win Nobel Prizes and major awards or become best-selling novelists, he added. Some environments are set up for people at stage 3, and this behavior leads to organizational success. Spiral Dynamics author Don Beck echoed this theme when he said, the first question to ask is, does the job require stage 3? Coaching people to drop behavior that is required by the system is harmful to everyone. If he's doing what the job requires, Beck added, don't bother him. The question to ask is, would you be more successful in stage 3 or stage 4? Increasingly, the needs of business require a level of collaboration impossible at the I'm great level. Ken Wilber, the most translated American academic and head of the Integral Institute, added, the center of gravity is moving away from stage 3 in business. We agree. Many people enter stage 3 with the best of intentions. It often starts with a desire, maybe even a vow, that they are going to be a different type of professional, treating people with respect and dignity. I'll empower them, they often told themselves, repeating the vow to us later, instead of just telling people what to do. But as they tried, like Dr. Coyle, they learned that the system around them doesn't support empowerment, in spite of the rhetoric that people are our most important asset. People operating at stage 3 told us that when they started mentoring and investing in people's development, their bosses asked them, why are you doing that? Or said, it's time to get your ship in order. They often realized, like Coyle, that despite preaching empowerment, their company operates by giving and taking orders. Scott Adams, Dilbert creator, became a new boss when he and a partner opened Stacy's Cafe in 1998, and later Scott Adams Foods. He said, What I learned is that I don't really like being a boss because I'm not good at it. I'm a little too generous. My personality is more along the lines of, you want a company car? Take two. I removed myself from that because I need people who are capable of doing the tough stuff. I try not to make any decisions. Adams took a rare path and gave up managing. Since you're listening to this book, you probably took a different path. Most people in our research, as we heard several times, sucked it up and got in line. And as they did, they saw their disappointment in the system and the company deepen. I worked harder and harder, Dr. Coyle told us, and have done very well for myself, the patients I serve, and the other physicians I lead. Coaching tip: don't wait. Several CEOs in our study said that they learned they had to operate by command and control, giving orders and taking orders rules. But they vowed that, in the words of one, I'll set a different standard when I get to the top. The same person went on to say, but between the board, Wall Street, and my own reputation for being a certain type of manager, I guess that was unrealistic. He reported feeling stuck in managing the way he had been managed. By contrast, the people we will meet in the second half of this book decided to do things differently now, before they had all the resources they thought they needed. If you feel your business would be better served by migrating your corporate tribe's dominant culture to stage 4, we suggest you begin that effort right away. While stage 3 is the zone of personal accomplishment, it's an area where people tend to feel let down by others. I'm going to be the kind of boss who promotes hard work, one new manager in a large New York company told us. 6 months later, the same person said, I learned that most people aren't interested in putting in the effort like I am. Since you are listening to this book, there's a good chance that you too have been disappointed in other people because high achievers almost always report this feeling. A senior physician, not Coyle, told us, as a resident, I learned that nurses are nurses for a reason. They don't want to work hard enough or aren't bright enough to be doctors. A lawyer said, I treat the support staff as nice people because they are, but they aren't motivated like I am. Otherwise, they'd be lawyers too. One new sales manager said, speaking for hundreds of others, it's tough to say, but most of my guys don't want to work as hard as I do. Inherent in stage 3 is the view that people are where they are because they worked for it, and others aren't there because they gave up. Coyle fought the lack of support and became one of the top doctors in his field. Even when faced with adversity, people at stage 3 will put in the time, effort, study, and political savvy to thrive. Ironically, at this point, when they succeed without the perception of support, they feel the most alone, because everywhere they look, they see people who tried to hold them back and who gave up, and so can't understand how their success feels. Coaching tip: encourage mutual contribution. People at stage 3 rely on themselves. The issue that they need to address, especially later in the stage, is that their effectiveness is capped by their time, which is a limited resource. The more the person can accept help from others, the more he will see that help from others is not only helpful but necessary to his becoming a fully developed leader. Once he begins to form strategies that rely on others, and in which others rely on him, he will have taken a big step into stage 4. The building of a stage 3 economy. For most professionals in the United States, stage 3 is the top of the mountain. How did it get to be that way? Between 1890 and 1920, along with the huge influx of immigrants, 80% of the rural population moved to the city to take millions of new factory jobs, and they brought their children with them. On the farm, many children meant many helpers, but in the factory, many children meant many accidents and acts of exploitation. Children's welfare and child labor practices became the issue of the age, and most people felt that something had to be done to protect and train the children while mom and dad worked in the factory. The solution was to train a new generation of workers by teaching them inside a system that looked a lot like a factory. In school, bell rings, go to class. Bell rings, recess. Bell rings, go back to class. Bell rings, eat lunch. Bell rings, go home. At school, children with the right answer get a gold star, then an A. A star pupil is one who does the homework and has the right answers. This new system undid the classic liberal education, which said that the value was in the well-designed question, and this shift in focus made the worker exploitable, often consigning him to a stage 2 or 3 career. Stage 4, discussed in the next 5 chapters, starts with well-designed questions. In between bell rings, children learned what they needed to become effective workers, and that amounted to reading, writing, and math. The system didn't emphasize creative thinking, strategizing, leadership, or innovation. Stars were smart conformists, and people who stuck to the pattern became model students. That approach also bred the "I'm great and you're not" mentality, based on homework, grades, and knowing the right answer. It does not emphasize empowerment, creativity, or individual satisfaction. When children come of age, they find a familiar model. Whistle blows, go to work. Whistle blows, take a break. Whistle blows, go back to work. Whistle blows, eat lunch. Whistle blows, go home. A star employee is one who knows the right answers to a factory problem, obeys the rules, and doesn't make waves. People are encouraged to repeat this pattern until they retire. While the system of education is changing, critics, including us, believe it's happening too slowly and that the new approach needs to build stage 4 thinking, not stage 3 addiction to personal success. People tend to have compassion for those going through the transition of early stage 3. Employees often said, behind closed doors without the person in the room, "She's under a lot of pressure to prove herself, and I feel for her." A sales manager talking about a new salesperson who had done well said, "He had a good month, but this is a tough business, and next month may be rough for him." A nurse reported, referring to a new resident, "He's a nice guy who isn't used to giving orders, so we're trying to help." Because people at early stage 3 aren't stable in the "I'm great" language, they tend to oscillate in and out of late stage 2. On good days, they are great. On bad days, their lives suck. One manager expressed the flip-flop this way: "When my boss is happy, I'm happy. When he's angry, it really sucks to be me." The transition to the middle of stage 3 happens when people find a group that accepts them for their gifts. In professions requiring significant education, it's often a mentor who encourages the person to finish training and get serious about a career. For many managers, it is their title. In Dr. Coyle's case, he had left County USC without finishing his residency, so his options were limited. At the time, the laws in Texas allowed a physician in his situation to work as an emergency room ER doctor. He again rose to the top, running one of the ER departments, but was, in his words, bored to tears. During this time, he met a world-famous surgeon who convinced him to complete his residency, this time at Harvard. With his training behind him, he moved to the middle of stage 3. Middle stage 3. In time, People make friends whom they believe are